This is HPR episode 2391 entitled HPR Community News for September 2017 and is part of the series HPR Community News. It is hosted by HPR volunteers and is about 81 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is HPR volunteers talk about shows released and comments posted in September 2017.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hi everybody, my name is Ken Fallon and joining me tonight is Dave. Say hello, Dave.
Hello, Dave.
Hi, and this is HPR Community News for the month. That is September 2017, and it's been a very busy month, Dave.
It has been rather a busy month, yes. I don't know. What have we been doing again? I can't quite remember.
Dave. Oh, actually, we don't have it in the AOB. What we mostly have been doing is all that comment feed stuff.
That's true, yeah.
We should make a note to talk about that.
Yes, okay.
But let's do that at the end of the show. This, for people joining us for the first time, is a community news roundup of all the shows that have been going on in the last month. And we take one show out where volunteers like Dave and myself come on and make sure that we go through every show just to prove to you that at least two people have listened to these shows and drawn some sort of inspiration from them. We also, Dave and I happen to be some of the volunteers that keep this thing running, along with Josh, who's been very active this month. And HPR itself is a community podcast network, and that means we take shows from random people on the internet and we put them under the HPR banner, so you don't need to worry about things like RSS feeds and comments and DDoS attacks and all that sort of stuff. That's all taken care of for you. All you need to do is think of a topic, press record, talk about the topic, go to the upload form and upload the show, and we'll do the rest. Well, that summarizes it, Dave, for you.
I think that just about covers it. Yes. There's many nuances we could go into, but now's not the time.
No, that's correct. And this is the point where we traditionally welcome new hosts, but alas, Dave, alas.
There are no new hosts, I'm afraid. No, very sad.
That means either we've reached the maximum limit where our entire listenership is now contributing shows, or somebody hasn't been guilted enough into doing it, Dave.
Yeah. I think the people who do listen and contribute should be out there spreading the word.
Not saying that I'm angry. Very, very disappointed. Anyway, let's start off with who is Horton Works and what they do with Hadoop. And this was by JWP. And this was about Hadoop and what you can do with it. Pretty cool Apache project, actually. Little bit data management is a little bit of a strange thing for me, I must say.
Yeah, I don't know much about this at all. I keep meaning to get more into it, just experiment with it, but I haven't done so yet. But yeah, it's good to have JWP telling us stuff about it.
Seems like a very interesting. It's like a file system for a global file system. It's pretty cool. But
That's part of the whole build of the thing. Yeah. I nearly got a job as a Hadoop administratory type person, but I didn't.
I see why you failed the interview, Dave.
I know nothing about it. Sorry.
If you don't, you listen.
Clear off then.
If you don't listen to JWP's episode.
Yes, quite.
And then the following day we had the community news, and there were four comments for this. Frank had a comment saying, I have a very selfish idea for a show. Actually, you do that and then I'll do my own reply.
Okay. Frank says, I have a very selfish idea for a show, a tutorial based on moving HPR from HTTP to HTTPS. Selfish because I need to do the same thing to stop Firefox's incessant and, given the nature of my site, quite silly nagging. It's not like I manage any personal information after all, and other than my own logon, I mean, really. heartfelt. I've nothing but praise for my hosting provider's tech support. They have proven themselves to be real troopers and generally find their help files actually helpful. But I must admit that since I now have a VPS and I'm all on my own some managing something like implementing SSL, I'm quite confused and unsure as to what I must do. So.
Yeah, and my reply actually wasn't to Frank's, I just noticed, and it should have been. And the troubles with the HTTP to HTTPS that we were referring to in the last show was the fact that our common system was incapable of switching to HTTPS because hard-coded URLs with HTTP:// were put in. And among other things, libraries not working and all sorts of stuff, and not us being able to upgrade it. So that was actually a bit of a pain. In general, though, I switched on HTTPS for some of my own sites using Let's Encrypt. And if you go to the Let's Encrypt website, they give you fairly easy step-by-step instructions how to do it. Not that tough.
Cool. Yeah. It's poor Frank's gone without a reply, but yeah, we should maybe drop him a note or something.
Yeah, true. And we've gone live with the new comment system. Keep us posted if you notice anything weird on the site. And then the following one was Dodo Dummy. In the US, Jelly is also clear and Jam isn't. Jelly is clear. Shulky stuff. Jam is not clear unless shulky. Jam and preserves are a bit harder to differentiate. I've lived all over the US, and this difference between jam and jelly seems pervasive. To which you replied.
Oh, okay. That was me being a little bit going on about the subject. And anyway, and I replied saying jam versus jelly. Hi, Dodd, D-O-D-D, dummy. I'm not sure how he wants to pronounce it. I've never heard the term jam used in US English. So my experience is not broad. Researching, I found this. I bought a jar of raspberry jam. She made us jelly sandwiches, which implies that the words jam and jelly are a little interchangeable. I've also believed that...
Not really, Dave. You might have bought her a raspberry jam. And then she said, thank you very much for the jam. Let me make you some jelly sandwiches from this jar of jelly I have over here.
Just let me read this and keep your comments to yourself. I also believe that where UK English uses jelly, which can refer to a jam with all the bits taken out, based on pectin, which is the stuff that makes it stick, and a dessert, they also use it as a dessert made with flavoured gelatin, whereas US English uses jello for the latter. I may be wrong, language is a moving target. Anyway, thanks for clarifying things. So anyway, I've learned something. I'd never heard anybody use, I've always heard like peanut butter, jelly, etc. So I've never heard anybody say jam, but then I've only visited the US once, so it's not the best of samples.
No, that's true. DocBook. Forsake Markdown now. Plateau walks you through writing in DocBook, processing and rendering output. And there are no comments on the website, but there was a comment on the that I got in person to this, which was a discussion with a work colleague who listens to podcasts. Hi, work colleague who hasn't submitted a show yet. And she was saying that, that right there, nor is it doubt, that yes, basically my shows are boring, but Plateau's shows are really nice.
Ah, right.
So let's
yes.
be honest.
Wonderful.
Not hurt at all. I've got a thick skin, me.
yeah, that's good. That's really positive stuff. Good feedback
yeah,
there.
Well, but we all know this. And the following day, we had PC Gen. Clatter talks about PC Generator on the tabletop series about building characters for your next exciting RPG session. Use PC Gen, and here's how. I would not have known what this was. I would not have known that this existed, but now I'm glad I do, actually.
Well, I mentioned it to my daughter, who said, oh, send me the details, but there's It's a huge lot to send her in the show, but I haven't done it either. But I strongly
suspect Klaatu is preparing us for later shows where he talks about, in my earlier episode, I spoke about PC Gen, which he actually has done in later shows.
Yeah.
The following day, we had how to make sauerkraut, the one thing my wife won't let me have. And it was by Tony Hughes, aka Tony H1212. And it's part of our cooking series, which is taking off a storm. Pretty cool. Can't really comment on that. And the people who did comment were Jezra, who said, "Splendid. Thank you for the inspiration. Cabbage is now on my shopping list. I will be making a batch this weekend."
Tony replied saying, "Splendid. Jezra, you're welcome." It was other people freely sharing via YouTube and blogs that got me started, so I thought I would share with the HPR community. As well as it tasting really good, it has health benefits as well. Win-win in my book. By the way, after making your first batch, try adding a couple or 10 cloves of garlic in a future batch. The flavor is fantastic, and you can eat the fermented garlic or use in other recipes.
Very nice. Very nice. The following day, we had competing interests. We look into the marketplace and see how everybody's interests clash. And this is part of Ahuka's healthcare series. And the following day, we had Information Underground, 21st Century Superstar. Klaatu, Lost in Blogs, talk about an iconless culture. And I was writing down a notepad full of comments for this, but then I kind of gave up because it's just one of these conversations that I really... Oh, actually, I echo Kevin's thingy here. If you want to read a comment.
We had a comment from A Pork Chop, which is unusual. Communities. While all the specialized media makes it more difficult to find commonalities, the internet and forums like Reddit also make it easy to find other people that share interests. That's a good point, actually, yes.
Just true. And Kevin said, Kevin O'Brien, "Great discussion. Love the show. The only problem I had is that I wanted to be part of the discussion." Well done. Actually, yes, I was feeling very much the same way during it.
I sort of was feeling I could, the conversations needed to be broadened a bit there, but it's an interesting subject. Made me think.
Yeah, but I was also thinking like Game of Thrones now is a thing that everybody has to have seen the new episode of blah, 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 and then people disappear from the floor and they're not allowed to talk about it. So, but that was also mentioned. So, yeah, rather interesting. On the other hand, you get specialized podcasts like ours and other people's, and you've got a community. It's just a different community then. But a great episode. And the following day, we had an episode where the audio was not what you call great, truth be told. A rambling drive into work. I was able, and here, folks, is the barrier, if it's audible. And yeah, I had to struggle with this one. Was it audible or not?
You go on.
I sent it off to a cleanup, was it All Auto Works or something, where they clean up audio and they couldn't make it any better either. I don't think it was the car sounds. I think there was when he hit a bump, the microphone hit something, which caused, if the microphone was held somewhere else, it wouldn't have picked up as much vibrations.
Yeah, it was odd. It's a very odd thing, actually, because I listened to it. I always tend to listen to these when I'm doing something else, and I managed to pick up everything he said. I felt, but it may be because my audio setup, an MP3 player with some fairly crappy headphones, didn't make it. I didn't get the finer details of the noise, perhaps. I don't know. Or maybe my ears are so awful that I couldn't tell the difference. But but basically it was pretty dire, which he knew himself, Mr.
But no, I think cool for trying. And it can only improve. Do says, "I know you said you didn't need this, but I was going to comment on your last show where you said don't think about any processing was necessary. While I agree content is king, you might find this tip handy. When I record in a noisy environment, I record a few seconds without speaking to pick up the background noises. The reason for this is that you can use those few seconds as a model for noise reduction in Audacity. It only takes a few seconds to process in Audacity, so it's not much more work. Since this is common practice, did you try this?
Yeah, good,
but I don't think that would have helped, because the audio processing thing that I sent it off to filters out the gaps in between the speaking to get that audio level, and it didn't do a lot for it, to be honest.
I think it would have been really hard to have got the junk out of that. Lovebug replied to this as well.
I would love it if Mr. X tried the same experiment again, just without actually any content, but recording, getting as many different recording devices that he could, to see and give us samples of the audio of, you know, the same thing, say some uncopyrighted phrase in the car, recorded on as many 5, 6, 7 different devices, and then see if we can pick up the differences in them, do a comparison, and then send them off and see, can we get them processed and see what the best setup would be. We might make an interesting show, just by the way.
Yes. Anyway, we had a comment from the Love Bug, which was, great concept for a show, so I pinched it. I managed to get the gist of what you're trying to say, though I don't believe that any level of processing would have been able to tidy up what was ultimately recorded. I find that in noisy environments, a low-gain recorder with the microphone nice and close to your mouth tends to make you heard much better. I've just uploaded what will be episode 2400, where I basically pinch your idea and drive 28 miles to my work and spend most of the time talking about the 14 cars I've had. When I recorded this show, the only thing I did was push the file through Orphonic, which was the service you were talking about, Ken, to level it out. There was no noise reduction applied, and I do have a fairly noisy car. And he refers to his show. I would definitely like to hear another attempt from you at this.
Excellent. Cool. This could turn into a series.
It's an interesting thing. I don't have enough brain cells to talk very interestingly when I'm driving, so good for these guys who can do it.
I'd have to buy a car. It'd be a bit expensive for me.
Get the kids to make car noises around you. Anyway, yes.
Yeah. Why Duckbook? Tattoo talks about why DuckBook is the greatest, and he is so right. And I have decided to use DuckBook for my wife's book, which is now currently written in LibreOffice and needs to get translated and stuff. So, good reason to use it there.
Yeah. DuckBook. I've toyed with the DuckBook. I've actually played with loads of different text processing things and written one of my own a long, long time ago. Mm-hmm. And so a DocBook and SGML and stuff have been on the radar, but I've never used them, mainly because the XML of it puts me off a bit. But I should really sample it and see. I know you live in XML. So
yeah, and all those shows I've done about XML that I promised.
Yeah. But it's, if you want really professional quality results, then I think it's absolutely right. You need something like DocBook. And you don't want a desktop word processor for the really heavy stuff.
No, I was really in tears. I had to tell people to leave the room for a while, just because I was getting so frustrated at trying to get a finished working document, especially when it goes into hundreds of pages and you're going, something strange is going here. And this is me following all Kevin O'Brien's LibreOffice, set up your style, set up your everything rules. You know, it's still some pages, the content just randomly changed for no reason that I could see.
I've had the same experience. I resorted to using tech a long, long time ago. I had the job of doing an invitation to tender when we were buying a new computer. I had to write the ITT document, which is very, very formal and stuff. And I used tech in the end because it's the only way to make something really, really consistent. You wouldn't do that now, of course, but no. DocBook would be a better choice.
Okay, Mike Ray commented, cram down. I completely agree that it is impossible to write anything complex in Markdown without resorting to HTML tags. For me, it's putting anchor tags around headings to provide in-page links. You should take a look at Cramdown, Debian install, apt-get install, ruby-cramdown. Has stuff that Markdown doesn't, like tables, stuff like ID and classes, attributes for CSS, etc., and an auto generation of table of contents.
That's interesting, actually. I've not, but if you use pandocs Markdown, you get all that as well. I'm sure there's everybody uses any Markdown variant could probably say similar things, actually. So.
Yeah, but then I'm thinking to myself, well, if you have to go to the trouble of learning that, guys, learn HTML5. It's not that difficult. It'll do everything that you want. You can keep it relatively simple, relatively readable. And I know this isn't particularly about HTML, it's about DocBook, but, you know, for web content stuff, Markdown, yeah, if you have to go to the hassle, just use HTML.
I'm not sure I'd agree with that, but never mind.
Dave, how many times have you now, folks, that you know, I've passed over the pain, and I do mean, and I know it is pain, of formatting the show notes to Dave. And a hand on your heart, Dave, how many of those show notes go straight from input to output without some level of editing?
Oh, very, very few. Very few. I mean, some people send in beautiful Markdown, but that needs processing, obviously. We very, very few people send in really excellent HTML, which needs no processing
but
whatsoever.
Even though I'm talking about the Markdown, there are very few Markdown either.
Yeah. I quite enjoy the challenge, actually, but that's just me.
Yes, I know. That's how your brain works, and I exploit you, Dave, for your handicaps.
You do, don't you? Yeah,
I
yeah.
do, yes.
I enjoy it anyway. So comment two was from Florian, who says, what's so hard about code in a list? 7 spaces makes sense. It's 3 for everything belonging to the same point on your list, plus 4 for the code. This is about code appended to lists and so forth.
I have a comment about this when you're finished.
And
thank you.
He points at an example on GitHub, which I won't read out, and it's GitHub flavored Markdown. He prefers 3 backticks, but I come from TrackWiki syntax via restructured text to Markdown and using single backticks for inline monospace, but 3 open curly braces code here, closed 3 braces in track still annoys me. Yeah, I think I'd be annoyed at that. I understand the additional value semantic markup has, but in many cases it's nice, but not necessary. And he's a sysadmin who never broke out into HTML in RST or Markdown.
Right. Comment on that, Florian. Well done. You also show. Next thing is Tlatu never was able to figure that out. Other people in his work were never able to figure it out. And until that show aired, nobody in my work ever figured out that you needed to go 7 spaces. Why 7 spaces? Why not 42 spaces? It just makes no sense. It's just an arbitrary ridiculousness thing. And then it just doesn't look correct either, that you have to space 7 spaces. And then it bears no resemblance to the formatting, which is exactly what Markdown is supposed to be doing. It's supposed to be sort of giving you formatting in a human readable format. So not buying that. Thank you very much. I'm also not buying the sysadmin who never broke out into HTML or REST. I need a show about that proving the fact. What do you reckon, Dave?
I've written tons of Markdown now because I do all my HBR shows in pandoc flavored Markdown. And I break out into HTML so many blooming times, especially since Vim is very, very, very nice at giving me the HTML markup if I want it. Yeah. So, but then maybe I do more advanced things. I don't know. But it's hard to believe, really. Although I'm calling Florian a liar, of course.
We're prepared.
I'd love to know.
We're prepared. No, I really would love to know. And it is a show I would like to hear. If you can do Markdown without breaking out into HTML, that would be absolutely awesome. But I imagine, other than, like as Tlatu says, other than very boring documents, how do you even do a link? Well, yeah, okay. Links are kind of covered. Anyway, moving on. Tlatu says, Cramdown. Had not heard of Cramdown. I'll have a look for kicks because it sounds very good. Pretty good.
And Yes, another comment by Klaatu, GitHub Markdown. I found that GitHub Markdown is a heck of a lot better than Markdown. In fact, it's so significantly better, I don't see why it's not merged into Markdown yet, except that as far as I can tell, Markdown proper is unmaintained. The existence of GitHub Markdown reinforces my point. Markdown needed fixing. But I agree. Sometimes DocBook is overkill and GitHub Markdown is a better choice. But I didn't say that in this or my previous episode. I did mean to, but maybe I was blinded by DocBook passion. So, yeah, good for that. But the Markdown thing is one of the worst pains in computing, in the world of computing, in my mind. I was on the Markdown list for many years because I used to use it at work as well. And the infighting about Markdown's crap. No, it's not. It's wonderful. And all this stuff that was going on. And the guy who'd invented it was so stubborn, is so stubborn about any changes that that's why it's fragmented and gone off into all these subversions of it. If only, you know, there had been a process where suggestions could have been incorporated, it would have been one thing and a good thing. But it's not the way of the world, is it?
We're not the People's Front of Judea.
Yeah, we're crammed down, marked down, GitHub panned up.
Exactly, yeah. Sending text messages from the command line. And this was from... Why is that not jumping out at me? Why is that not listed there? Jezra, of course.
This is Jezra, yeah, Jezra. Yeah. We maybe don't highlight the host enough to make it jump out at you. I don't know.
But Jezra normally has a photo. Where's Jezra's photo gone?
Oh, that's a good point. I don't know. Something broken? I've never noticed.
I can't take any more broken stuff, Dave.
That's the world. The world is broken.
No, this whole month has been one continuous broken HBR. God, the hours I spent this month. Anyway, notes.
Have we lost the... Oh, yeah, yeah. Anyway, something to look at after this show, I think.
No, I'm going to bed after the show.
Well, awesome. I'll have a look at it and see if I can spot anything. Anyway, okay, go on. On you go.
Anyway, for the people who are wondering what we're talking about, if you were a host of HBR and you post your show, you would get a picture. You can either upload that picture or you can attach it to Gravatar, and we will pull it down at a reasonably regular interval and do it that way. So, show notes. He doesn't need any show notes because he's a bunch of waffling about emails, text, sending from the command line. And I edited the comments to add in that it was recorded in Audacity, links to his previous chicken soup, and provided links to the show about the SMS gateway. To which Jezra commented...
You offering that to me?
I would do, because then I'm replying to him, you see.
Yeah, okay. Jezra says, feedback. I'm not sure this episode is explicit. Sometimes I forget if I swear or not. Anyway, the coop isn't always opening and closing properly. So today I'm in the process of updating the code that controls the coop door. I want to read that as co-op, as my brain is bent.
Yeah.
Testing has resulted in a massive amount of text and emails. Oh, yeah. Thank you, Ken, for the show notes. Smiley face.
We do what you ask, smiley face. Hi, Jezra. And this is more the comment about whether it's explicit or not. And I have to do my official Ken thing here. We process the shows as per the instructions given to us by the host. In your case, the host was marked as explicit on upload. Hashtag explicit. We never contact people who have marked the shows as explicit, as there's a large body of hosts that deliberately mark all shows as explicit as a precaution or protest. Another link to the stuff you need to know, explicit. We have had, on occasion, contacted shows who have marked their shows as clean, where we feel that the show may not be considered inoffensive in every region of the world. If it ever occurs where the hosts disagree, we will post the case to the HBR community mailing list. HBR 22-10 on freedom of speech and censorship describes the agreed approach to this topic.
And Jezra replies, force of habit, ? It was probably force of habit that caused me to mark the show as explicit, smiley face.
Probably. I could not trust myself to go back and even listening to it again, I could not trust myself that I would pick up some expletive Dave, help.
Expletive.
That's the money.
That's the one. Yes.
Oh, yeah. I don't want to open up that thingy again. But the only time we've ever mentioned it before, people have resolved the situation to everyone's satisfaction, and that's wonderful. Raspbian X86 on a P4 tower. This is a show on installing Pixel on a Pentium 4 tower PC by Tony Hughes. And I wouldn't have thought to do this, but what an excellent idea.
Yeah, I had no idea this is possible. There must be something that's come up quite recently.
Yeah, they've released the Pixel distribution, and Tony is going like a madman around installing it and everything.
Yeah,
I was shocked and stunned at the efficiency, which of course you're going to get because it's designed for a low-power system on a chip thing.
I've seen other people mentioning it since Tony's show, Explaining Computers was demonstrating it, for example, on YouTube. But if you ever watch that, it sounds like a pretty interesting. Yeah, I must give it a shot myself.
Yep. And glad you posted. For some reason, I hadn't considered this for older hardware. Thanks for the post and the idea. It's basically what I'm stealing my ideas again there, Dave.
Yes.
Let's see how many times we can give different pronunciations to his handle.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yes. D-O-triple-D ummy.
D-O-D-cubed ummy.
Clear cut says Razium X86. I did the same thing with a very similar P4 computer. It does eat some electricity, but is substantially faster and has more inputs and outputs than an original Model B Raspberry Pi. I could make for a more enjoyable experience learning to use Pi, since it can use USB persistence and be utilized on nearly any PC. Since most of the software is the same, it could be a great way to make up for lack of funds to fill a classroom with Raspberry Pi machines. Nearly any donated PC that still runs could be made to work even cheaper than buying any of the Pi computers. People could rotate, so if they want to experiment with GPIO pins or other Pi-specific components, they can have a chance, while others won't have to sit around and wait for a Pi to become available. A new version of Raspbian X86 Stretch should be coming out very soon.
That's
a good point. That's a good point, actually. Yeah. Recycling old PCs into classrooms is a great idea. It's probably happening to some extent, but this would make it a lot easier, wouldn't it?
Indeed. Yes, and a lot of those old... I know there are a lot of labs set up running Windows XP and stuff. And can you still hear me?
I can hear you, yeah.
I think I may have realized what's going on. I think I had some network issues earlier on. And the network, I had my Wi-Fi enabled for some reason. And as it was checking the network connection, my system started stuttering. Anyway, next day. 2381, the benefits of a tabletop. No, I wasn't finished my comment about labs and stuff. A lot of labs, computer labs, would have had XP computers, and those, of course, are now out of date. So it would be a good way to sort of upgrade them to run on Raspbian.
Yeah, absolutely. Great idea. Good for lugs and that sort of setup, code clubs or whatever, I don't know.
Yep.
Sounds good.
Tattoo talks about the benefits of analog gaming, and the comments from Guru Mark, and it is my job to butcher people's handles. How would you say that, Dave?
I would say Gurdunark, but probably not what you meant.
That's probably
what she meant.
Gurdunark doesn't sound as cool as Gurdunark. Yeah.
Okay. To do it.
You do that.
Okay. Good episode, says Gurdunark. The closest I come to gaming on the tabletop is chess, and my online gaming life is more about casual FOSS games than PC gaming. But even as a non-gamer, I really enjoyed this episode. It spoke to me because it reminded me how much I like science fiction novels better than science fiction on film, like the tabletop games in your
good
story.
Point, power good point.
Yeah, absolutely. The power of imagination in a sci-fi story trumps, for me, even the most well-done special effects in a science fiction movie. You make at least 7 good points here in a show I found a good listen. Excellent. That's a very nice comment.
Yes, and a very good point. I'm currently listening to Cavalcade's audios, Robots. He's got a two-part audio story out, and it is hilarious. But also, I am dying for next week when the next episode is out. This is Lost in Bronx.
Yes. On the letter.
Yes. Brilliant, brilliant shows. I have a weird sidetrack. Trying to go to sleep to clear my mind, I try and come up with, you know, space opera things, you know, nice, just boring space things. And then he comes out with his shows, and their universe is 1,000 times more elaborate than mine, more accurate, better stories, better written. Talent of Lost in Bronx is
he does have a hell of an imagination. That's certainly true.
People have not heard his stuff, go check it out. Join up to his mail list and you'll get links to the early shows before they're posted on his website. Anyway, Sean Sheehan. Sheenan?
Yes. Shannon?
Shannon. You're correcting me. Shane Shannon, even, on Irish names. Things are bad, Dave. Things are bad. In my defense, I'm half Dutch now, so... Okay. I like how you put that. I enjoyed your comment on GM being a person that has too much imagination for one person. Well put. And that actually right there describes my son. Awesome. I nearly cried. Yes. Sooner or later, my son will become a dungeon master and I will never see him again.
Yeah. It's wonderful to see youngsters too with tons of imagination for that, in that sort of way. Yeah, cool.
Non-spoilery review of Git Commit Murder and Forever Fails by Michael Warren Lucas. That has to be the best book title for geeks ever. I don't know what the popularist community might think of that, but for anybody in the geekdom, that should be that's a definite read right there, just for that.
Yeah, I agree.
We didn't have any comments on that, but basically a little book review there by, or a book teaser would be a better word, by 5150.
Nice to hear 5150 on HBR again.
Isn't it?
Yes.
What's in My Hand Shack by Steve Sainer, recorded on the very night that we recorded the amateur radio roundtable, and I came on as a moron, intended to be a guest, but really, folks, when you hear that show, and sometimes Dave here, we have people who send in a show and think, oh my god, this was the most terrible show ever, and whatever. This, my participation in this was truly, truly awful. I was just so tired and not thinking. And the poor guys were on there just going, beating their heads against the wall, going, what sort of a moron is on there? But anyway, back to this show. Preempting everybody whenever it comes up.
if
you are a ham radio enthusiast and you have a ham shack, can you please do a show like this? What I'd love is a little link to each of these radios and stuff. And he also has made a very good point about my little radio mightn't be that good because, you know, the Bofang, as it might broadcast crap on either side. So have a listen to this show.
Yeah, I thought he did a lovely job. Very, very nice. So much kit, so much stuff.
Yeah,
it's
but
quite,
on the other
quite
hand,
overwhelming.
It is, you know. It seems expensive to me as well. But then again, you know, you look around any of our, you know, what's in your own shack. You've got a laptop, you know, 1,500 quid's worth of a laptop sitting right there, and then you got a whole pile of pies around and some monitors around, you know, it kind of builds up. It just happens to be ham radio stuff, you know what I mean?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, and my attic is stuffed with odds and ends, yeah. Like a dead laser printer and a monitor out of a game, tabletop game, which I tried to make him, you know, all that sort of stuff. I'm sure his
exactly.
place... But yeah.
I thought the best comment in this was, you know, your shack is never finished. So just record it at this point in time, and then 2 years later on, you can tell us what changed in your shack. So go for it.
Pretty amazing. Yeah,
Blackwell in Scotland. Hey, Benya comes to Scotland and talks to Andrew about Slackware 14.2 a year after the release. And I apologise to everybody in Scotland for that terrible accent.
That was obviously a Glasgow accent. Yeah, yeah. Definitely. Yeah, yeah. Which is where they were.
You've got an Edinburgh accent, surely.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Something like that.
Oh, this is, yes. This is so funny about Arch being, what is that, an elephant? And Arch is fruit flies and Slacker is for elephants. It's crack me up. This did.
Yes, yes. That's great. I enjoyed. Well, obviously, I know both of these guys quite well, and it's good to hear them, hear their chat.
And Sons of Man 1 says, still thriving. Good to see HBR showing Slackware love. Yes, indeed.
No, it was good. We need to know more about Slackware. Have you ever used it yourself, Ken?
I have, yes. I once did a... actually, it was one of the first distros I ever ran. I should actually... I did a part of somebody else's show, how I got into Linux, but I should probably do one as well. But anyway, it's a long story. But, yeah.
No, it's something I've never tried myself, and listening to this sort of chat makes me want to just have a mess around with it on a machine that's not particularly important. But yeah, sounds like a lot of work, but not as much work as Arch and Gen 2 and stuff.
Or Linux from scratch.
Oh, well, yeah. I'll be dead before I finish that if I ever started it, so I'll not bother.
That's not that bad. If you do it in a virtual machine, then it's not that bad. That's kind of cheating. Anyway, the next day, healthcare costs. Why are the cost pressures in healthcare? And again, this is part of the series on healthcare that he's doing. And Be Easy says, impressive. Thank you for this episode. Once again, I am impressed by the knowledge of the healthcare system in the US. And I'd love to hear your, what's that word? Apolitical.
Apolitical.
Yep. Cool.
And Bob comments with more information. I hope you can address some of the points brought up in Adam Ruins Everything, the real reason hospitals are so expensive, in a future episode. The video seems to challenge your arguments related to why healthcare is so expensive in the US. Their video sources are here, and he gives a couple of links. I would argue that it's possible to decrease the individual cost of equipment by increasing its utilization. For example, it's common practice in European hospitals to run expensive equipment like MRI machines 24/7 to reduce the overall cost. It's also possible to increase human utilization by concentrating skills in facilities dedicated to a given specialism. This is being done to great efficiency in India. And there are facilities dedicated to, for example, eye surgery or heart treatment. This has proven to be extremely useful in attracting the best specialists from all over the world because they are guaranteed to have a high throughput of patients in their dedicated field. This allows facilities to train up many more specialists as there is a constant utilization of their skills. Interesting. I watched the YouTube video and some interesting points, though it has a presentation that's very lightweight for a very heavy subject. So it I would like to, following up all the links in it would be worth doing, I suspect.
Yeah, exactly. It does seem to his thing about the healthcare costs in Ireland. They simply said, okay, well, we're not. They put a board in place to look at the price of. That hospitals were being charged, and it was just ridiculous. They're going, no, they're setting worldwide, countrywide, the limits on what hospitals can pay for drugs and stuff. So, yeah. Although I do see Ahuka's photos in there. So what's going on? Strange.
I think we must have a gravitar fault of some sort here somewhere.
Yeah.
We need to. I made a note of it, so we'll pick up on this one later.
So the next day was the decline and fall of Tickle, TCL. Very interesting show. And I'm glad Clacky brought it to us and also brought more stuff to the Commons in getting permission from the author to release it as CC by SA. Yeah, good. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Losing community, I think, is something that more than one project should be very careful about doing.
Yeah, it was an interesting analysis of the problem. I used I've never called it Tickle. It seemed a silly name, but it's just me. TCL, I always called it. I used it a lot at one point because that and TK was the only way to get stuff to work on a bunch of Unix workstations I got lumbered with. Our principal of the university bought 50 Unix workstations to implement a thing called DEC Athena. Digital Equipment Corporation's implementation of the MIT Athena project, which we had to then implement for the whole blooming university. And TCL TK and Expect TK were two things that I found were amazingly useful to speed up stuff on that, you know, just to provide interfaces to various things. So yeah, a lot of interesting stuff there.
And it's /*\T(k). There's a Ruby TK that used to be Guile TK, best frenemies, but Guile TK was deprecated and replaced with Guile GTK, which was then replaced with Guile GNOME. It's pretty funny that although Python has had a large degree replaced TCL out there, any system that includes a full Python also includes TCL TK because Ticker depends on TCLTK as part of Python standard lib. Even funnier, the proudest project of the Guile world, GUIX, depends on Python via graphviz and glib, and therefore TCL. Well, now.
Yeah, it's embedded. TK inter is the thing that's in Python, by the way. It's true. When I first started using Linux on Red Hat, then just about every GUI that was TCLTK. Some of them a bit clunky, but they got better as they moved away from it.
Retro would be the word you're looking for.
yeah, definitely, yeah. I used to use the Motif version of TK, which was nice, but weird. But Motif was weird anyway. So Mad Sweeney says, TK is not accessible. RMS started a flame fest when he posted to Compang TCL in 1994. Why should not use TCL? And he gives a link to the Google Groups that has archived this chat. I don't like TCL for its stringly typed nature, but TK seems like a nice lightweight GUI toolkit. But unfortunately, it doesn't work with screen readers on any platform, so you should avoid using it unless you're just developing something for your own use.
And Clacky responds, RMS Flamefest. The Flamefest you were referring to is the TCL war, linked in the show notes. Thanks for the comment on the accessibility. That's good to know if you're building a serious UI, but I guess it's another example of how TCL TK hasn't quite left the 80s.
Matt Sweeney replies, Flamefest. Hi, Clacky. Yeah, I missed that. That'll teach me to listen at 4x speed.
Oh, yes, those blind readers horsing through our shows. Free weights and bicycles. Frank's discussion of the lifelong love of free weights. This is in danger of becoming a series, Dave. One more show.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, interesting.
It is interesting, yeah. He makes a good point that he didn't need to do a whole lot. I particularly loved his comment on the exercise book. You know, he hasn't had any data loss in 4 years. Very funny.
Yeah. Well, he's a bit old school, I think, Frank. So I tend to agree with him quite a lot, actually. But,
might be
similar ages.
Yeah, I've had this debate with people before, you know, and work. Oh, if they if we get a solar thing, then the whole world is going to come to an end and thingy. And I just remember the interview that was done at the beginning of the year 2000 when they were going around, yo, what have you done? Well, the guys went, well, you know, we only switched to using the computer last week, so we'd probably go out to the shed and take in the forms that we were using before that, and sure, it'll be grand.
Yes.
Life will go on, my friends.
Yes.
If we can have two world wars before the days of the internet, I think we can continue in the assurance that mankind will be morons and continue to communicate. Anyway, apt splunking, the planet of the apts. I am now looking forward to more of these apt splunking shows, although I still think it's a waste, given three fines per episode, but it seems to be working for him, so I'm going to let him off the hook now.
Oh, these are great. I like these very much.
The lightweight window managers. I haven't been tempted to change window managers in a while. Don't know if I should.
I think I've used tiling managers in the very, very early days. I think weren't some of the early X ones tiling, like TWM and stuff. Were they tiling? I can't remember, but yeah, I think I might even have used i3 just for a moment or two, I'm happy with what I've got. I'll just stick with it. I don't want too much change.
My lord.
Yeah, stop all this changing stuff. Come on. Blooming phones and
yeah,
fancy computers. What are you doing?
I saw that Raspberry Pi phone, Pi Zero phone. Did you see it? They put a GSM module onto a Raspberry Pi Zero. Oh, I am so getting one of those things. If they can get a Wi-Fi module and a 4G bridge dongle thing with maybe GPS on it, that's it. That's my phone. I am just going to have that. But can you imagine walking through the airport, right, and putting your phone, four stacked printed circuit boards with a battery and duct tape strapped around it into the airport thing? Everybody down! It's okay. It's just a Raspberry Pi.
The bomb squad will be there in seconds.
Anyways, he's been wasting shows again, and he gets his own series. Series 98 is apt splunking. And Jezreel
very
says,
cool. Excellent, excellent. So, yes, are we changing the names of the shows or no?
No. Yeah, if he wants to, if he has suggestions.
Okay, so that was your comment. And Jezreel commented, haha, you said unicorn, because he was trying to do phonetic thingies. So I thought it was quite inventive.
Yeah, he also said some very, very strange... very strange alphanumerics in there. That's alphanumerics, isn't the word?
Phonetics. Yes. It was his own construction, I thought. Perfectly good.
Yep, fine by me. Thoughts on lifetime learning by BEZ. And talk about experience as a good learner. Very nice little show. So, links to his blog post. Basically, learn a few things and do it well.
Yeah, that's an excellent philosophy, I think. I very much agree with that. And nicely put.
I had never considered that lifetime learning was not an option. But apparently for some people it is. I don't know how you could... I doubt anyone listening to this show suffers from the not lifetime learning thing.
I think it's the hacker outlook, hacker in the non-pejorative sense. It's you know, you want to work out how to fix that thing and make it better, et cetera, et cetera. And you've got to learn new things to do it. So, you know, you're right. I think it is the community we're in. Yeah, but, how could you not? I mean, you have to live on a diet of terrible telly.
When do you stop? Yeah. Okay, tabletop games. Counterpoint to episode 2381, Plateau talks about PC gaming compares to tabletop gaming. So that was it. It was also a good balance there between, because in one episode he was arguing with himself, basically. He was arguing the point that there are advantages to PC gaming so over tabletop gaming. Pretty good. And that was it, Dave. We're done. Or are we? Comments? What comments from five?
We're not done.
You're not done.
I just have to go and let the cat out, or in, if you let me step away for a moment.
I'll go grab a beer and then we can truncate silence.
Okay. All right. Okay.
Right. I'm back. Is the cat out of the bag?
Cats? Who'd keep them? As soon as you go out, she wants to come back in again. I don't know. I mean, things really have to get a cat flat, but there's nowhere to put one in this house. Anyway.
So you send me the comments file. Oh, cool. I'll just work off that then, shall I?
Yep, okay.
So the comment on... you can read the first comment, but... Have you got your text file?
I just have to get it. Yeah, so we have comments for shows prior to this month's shows. And we have one on safely enabling SSH... in the Depot Raspberry Nibbage by Ken Fallon from Sesame Mucho, who says, thanks for pulling this together. This is just what I needed. I made some changes. RaspberryPi.org is now using SHA-256 checksums, and I use LO setup to avoid all that calculation. This script is on GitHub, and he gives a link. Thanks again.
And I reply, fantastic, brilliant cleanup job. Thank you very much. I am so chuffed at this. I mean, you know, when you have something and it gets cloned, brilliant.
Yeah. It's very useful. It is useful. So it's good to have that that comment that shows that it is.
I am drinking a Schuffel, a Solil Belgian beer.
Ah, nice. Lucky you.
Yes.
Fosdem, I want to go to Fosdem. Anyway, that's for later. So we also had a comment to HPR 2356 Amateur Radio Roundtable number 2. Josh Huber, KF6ZZD, who says, Doppler shift of RF at terrestrial speeds. I like the explanation of the Doppler effects on radio frequencies at 3330. It was mentioned that at the speeds that satellites travel, the Doppler effect is noticeable, so much that you have to adjust your RX frequency. At the speed of a car travel, which is very slow compared to RF propagation, the Doppler shift wouldn't play a role. I just have one nitpick, which is that at car speeds, a measurable Doppler shift of RF signals indeed happens, even at gigahertz frequency, and this is exactly how police radar works, commonly using radar way up in the 10 gigahertz or 24 gigahertz bands. This is totally a nitpick, since we're probably not talking about a shift of more than a few kilohertz, and very few, if any, radios can tune in less than 10 kilohertz increments in UHF anyway. Enjoyed the show. Cheers.
And yes, nitpicking is what we do here, Dave. Some of us
Point. I didn't know that. It's good to have these things pointed out, actually. I haven't quite appreciated that. Of course, that is how radar works. My son's currently in Japan, and he's driving around in the island of Honshu, and everybody drives way over the speed limit, and he was just following along. And then he saw a Japanese radar which he managed to avoid just by the skin of his teeth. But it's quite scary. He was very scared at the, because you don't have radar traps like they do in Japan. In the UK, we have sort of things on sticks. These were people hiding behind bushes with radio scanny things. So yeah, that was the highlight of his holiday. Not
They have them here, and then people go on to apps and signal to people that they're available, and then it's broadcast on like the navigation systems that they're.
Ooh. People used to flash their lights to
warn. Yeah, exactly.
Ah,
yeah.
There's a guy hiding there. He'll get you.
Trade-offs in the US care system by Ahuka. Still have trade-offs. While that would be an improvement, there are still be other trade-offs to deal with, and probably benefit from reading the comment that was related to. One second. As to my comment, a better starting point would be to agree that everyone has the right to healthcare and work from there. While that though would be an improvement, there would still be trade-offs to deal with. Yeah, so he was commenting to my comment, I can reply to that, saying that indeed, yes, but if you say to the states that they need to pay for healthcare, then it's basically whoever is saying that you need to do it is the one that should be making sure that it's funded. So yeah.
Yeah, it's a big problem.
Anyway, but it's an interesting series in that it is a it's interesting the way he's gone through that, and probably at the end of the series I'd be better positioned to make some more comments about it if any jump to mind.
He's doing a great analysis of the whole thing. I'd love, looking forward to hearing the whole thing. Anyway, yes, moving on to exactly. Want to do the next one? 2364. This was Managing Your Android with AirDroid by Frank Bell. And Brenda J. Butler commented, run naked through the Googleplex. Ha ha. Love that comment at 50 minutes, 7 seconds, both because it's funny, because it brings the point home. Yes.
Classic.
That's quite an image.
And folks, feel free to, there's been a few of that this month where you take out a few sentences from the shows that make you chuckle and send it in. On the show 2369, but that was in Why Bills with his little meters problem, not having enough of them. Ambient noise. Thanks, Mike. You know, I didn't notice any of the outside noise.
Hold on. In the thing you're reading, I flagged the comments you don't need to read with a vertical bar on the left. That means
so explanatory, Dave. This is the green on the other ones.
Well, I just forgot to tell you. I mean, you should. Yeah. yes, we read them last week. That's the reason. Last
okay,
month.
Okay, not I mean, verified yes. says one, and I like the idea. Their handle is called Not Verified. I had to laugh out loud when you went remote raiding for batteries. I'm sure we've all done that more than once. Have you checked out any of the Amiga 328 based ESR component testers? I gave this one a try, link to the Amazon one. Based on the price and reviews, I got the one with the IC in socket because I tend to trash things. Nifty unit. I know, do a show. What? As if I'd say that, Dave. People stereotyping me. Well, I do want to hear this because I ordered a component tester. I got a whole go of components from my father-in-law's school was throwing out a box of components and they just gave them to me and I have no idea what they were. So I ordered a component tester from Banggood and the shipments didn't work. So I ended up not getting a component tester. So I'm looking for a good recommendation so people can do shows. That would be awesome.
Well, NY Bill replies to this, ESR tester kits. Yes, I have. Have you built one? Was the question. I built two of them. First, I sold to a friend at our lug for the cost of the kit. Worth the money. I was happy to solder up another. And he points to a link on his site where he keeps his pictures showing this particular thing. I even started recording an HPR on the unit, but life got in the way. So, yep. Get one, build it up, and give us a review. So, but I do believe he's that we might be hearing more about this from NY Bill. So, but I maybe
no, don't mention that. Because we have to have Not Verified, which is an awesome handle. Please record a show and claim that name before anybody else gets it.
And you'll be verified as Not Verified.
Yes, I will verify. Make sure that you are Not Verified. Excellent.
Actually, yes, good. So, mailing list stuff.
And now news from the mailing list.
See, we need to be able to do the mailing list more efficiently. Just to let people know what we're trying to do this week, or what I'm trying to do, because the website's been a little bit difficult to use lately. I tried to send out as much in the form of text files as I could this week, this month. So we were using the text file now, but I haven't done this for the mail. So anyway, I'm just looking at my mail client to try and work it out.
I'm looking at the thread on the archive, which has got them nested threads. The link in the show notes.
Yeah.
So I started with changes to the common system and anti-spam measures that we were going to put in and stuff. So I will probably now is as good a time as any to talk about that. That was a massive, massive pain in the rear end. Not because it was anything complicated or that. We did the changeover. Everything was going well. I wrote a comment changing script, which is basically a cut down version of the upload show script, and it's got all the checks in there. And actually, one thing about writing your own comment checking system is that you can absolutely tailor it to the HPR site, so there is nobody else will be able to use this other than HPR. So we've got a question in there called like the anti-spam question is, what does the P in Hacker Public Radio stand for? Duh. So you So, yes. We haven't received one spam comment since we implemented this. I'm pretty impressed.
No, we haven't received any spam comment. No, just don't wish them on us.
No, they're listening.
The robots are listening.
But there is some things that we need to. So we had to replay the functionality of the website, and I got migrate to make sure that it's accessible. It is accessible here's this funny thing that I do. The vast majority of comments that we get on shows are comments for the last month. Yeah, so, you know, the last 30 days. So I decided that if it's the last 30 days, you only get asked the anti-spam question, what's the P in Hacker Public Radio stand for? If you're commenting on shows older than that, which is a typical exploit of spammers, they'll pick a popular show or a popular blog post from a few years ago that you used to have approving spam comments on, and then they'll try and sneak in there. So in a clever and cunning plan, if you're commenting on the show in the future or commenting on the show more than 30 days in the past, you will get asked three additional things. Number one is, are you a spammer? And the default answer is yes, so you have to switch that to no. You'll have to answer who hosted this show, and you can select the host from a drop-down list. And then the other question is, what does HPR mean to you? And you need to put in there, convince us you are part of the community. And so far we've got two or three comments on older shows, and the comments in there have been very, very nice, actually.
Yes, one of the side effects of your test for older than 30 days is that it also determines if somebody's commenting on a show that's been posted but we haven't yet got to it in the feed. It also triggers that question. That's why you've had those questions from people who've been commenting in the future, as it were.
Yeah, exactly. Anything when it comes to the HPR site, anything that falls anywhere suspicious to me is triggered on that. And we also put in a limit now on the amount of verbosity that you can put into a comment. If you hit that limit, then you should be recording a show. That's pretty much it. It's fairly significant, the number of 1,000 something characters, don't know, 2,000 characters, but yeah, anything more than that and you should be recording a show, because that's what we do here. So that's that actual part worked quite well, and everything was hunky dory. And then we turned it on, and then the site stopped working.
Yeah.
It's funny now, Dave. It wasn't funny back then.
No, it was a difficult weekend.
The comment system was being used by the site to get access to the database, and so I had significant amount of changes to do to fix that. And then there was all sorts of byproducts of that where RSS feeds were not working because there was extra lines in there, things coming back, and all sorts of messing. But yeah, so none of this has anything to do with moving from HTTP to HTTPS. This whole thing, the whole comment system change, is getting rid of the old comment system. And I think you're now in the process of deactivating the tables, correct?
Yes, I've moved them away, so they're not that we know for certain. I think that nothing is trying to use them or do anything with them. So we can now archive them or whatever else we want to do with them, and then delete them out of the database.
Yeah, that actually leads to a lot cleaner system. So there's a few things. Sorry, what?
No, I was just going to say the old comment structure was very, very convoluted. Presumably,
so
Maybe because it was written to be a generic thing that was being sold to anybody who needed a comment system, but it had all sorts of problems as a consequence for us.
And the even the spam checking as well was terrible. And the fact that we attracted, you know, we had the name of the comment script down there, so all the bots could happily then go and find out their custom hacks for that particular script. Anyway, there you go. That was one thing. What else, Dave? What else? Amateur Radio Roundtable. 5150 offered stickers. Yes, shall we talk about that? Stickers, stickers, stickers. It's in the Annual Other Business News. Another thing that we did this month was to... FOSDEM, right? FOSDEM is coming up. It's a free and open source conference where lots and lots of developers and thousands of participants come to Belgium every year and walk around and talk about free software. And it's basically like, I don't know, hackers' version of heaven. Possibly with far too few ladies and people of... But there you are. And we... I got emailed some time back because I managed last year. I was bugging them so much about getting the contact information for the interviews around the stands. I think it got added to the list by mistake. So they sent me a link to the proposals for stands. So rather than just, you know, putting in the proposal for HPR ourselves, I contacted as many other podcasting shows in free culture that I could get my hands on, and basically, everyone replied back, yes, we would like to be included in the presentation, and we'll probably send you stickers and stuff. So if that does go ahead, and I'm not saying it will, because they, as you know, we're talking about, you're up against people like KDE, GNOME, Slackware, Postgres, MySQL, Google, Mozilla. You're up against massive big projects here, even trying to get a... And space is a massive premium there. So, but we put together a good pitch, I thought, Dave.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's an excellent thing, and lots of backing, which should cause the administrators to stop and think before they say no. Yeah, hopefully, they won't say no. But
I hope so. Yep. Because it would be an interesting change just to sit there and have the interviews come to me rather than me going to the interviews.
and we would have other podcasters coming along.
Absolutely,
to help,
yeah.
which would be really nice if that comes to be. It'd be super.
Yeah, it would be really, really awesome. I would take some time to make sure I'm down there for that. Okay, let me see. So 5150 is talking about stickers. Give you some links in there in the show notes. Probably coming back to that again. Michael sent us in the text even. They see the Belgian beer is beginning to take effect. if you're only going to have one beer a year, it should be a good, strong beer.
It's 20% jobbies.
It's like I'm back to, what is this here? 6%, yeah, but I'm a wuss. So the low Q poem, which I think, you know, we should threaten to put up every time the show is low. But it's a brilliant poem. With more or less it gives you the complete rundown of what HPR is and how it works.
No, this is great. I really enjoyed it when he did it, and to have the words for posterity is great too.
I added it to his show as well, and I must add it to the help site or whatever. So let's talk about the other thing, slow downloads again by Mike Gray. Well, we had a look to see, we're getting 500 errors, which we thought were related to us using up maximum bandwidth, because then we were checking and somebody was downloading a lot of shows. But we checked again and this was happening quite a lot, and then we realized that there were bots out there. And I'll just give you some quick parsing of the notes that I... of the log file I did for this month, just to give you an idea of what's going on. So between the 31st of August and the 30th of September, there were 1,879,000 hits on the websites. And that came from 67,500 unique IP addresses. Of those hits, nearly a million were from bots crawling. And of those, 75,000 were invalid requests. So a massive proportion of what was happening is down to invalid crawling, and I'll talk to you more about that. Of those, nearly all of those were by two bots, a Yandex bot and a MJ12 bot. And then there was also a dot bot. And then the numbers drastically go down to real bots like Bing bot and Google bot and whoever. Go down to into the few thousand range where you would expect them. Those morons, for want of a better word, are assuming that HPR is a open API and that it's using directories for attributes. So they're converting eps.php into eps forward slash something. And then they're finding an ep in there, and then they go forward slash, and then they go forward slash and forward slash and forward slash. I had a look in the show notes, and quite a lot of their URLs, no idea where they came from, never were on the site. Google or any other place had no reference to these. It just, and there are plenty of comments where these bots have been shown to be doing this to websites around the place. So Josh thought, okay, well, I'll put it in my robots.txt file and they'll surely stop crawling the website after that. Nope, they continued on. And then he found all the IP addresses of those sites, and nope, they changed the IP addresses. And now he has failed to ban scripts that checks the number of processes, number of open connections, and then every few minutes he bans all those IP addresses. And it's still going on today, still going on. We are sending requests in, so we're blocking them directly. There's a check on every web page as we evaluate the web page, and immediately replies back with a 404, which they should terminate the connection. But no, they continue on and continue on. So they've got a list of some URLs, and they're completely ignoring the 404s, and they're going out with random IP addresses. So they're being very, very naughty citizens. Now, the only other thing that we can do, how this is affecting the website, is we're getting 500 errors from time to time. So the site is either slow because they're using up all the resources, or we don't get connections in, or other things. So it's rather unfortunate, I must say, but it is been looked into. There is the possibility of installing some proprietary software, which will cost, what was it, $24 a month?
$20 a month is what I remember, yeah.
Yeah, so that'll work out at $240 a month. And to be honest, I can't afford to spend any more money on the HPR project. Josh is pumping enough money into this. Found out that he's not really making anything from the advertising that he's doing. And because we're not a charity, he will try and log it against his tax thingy, but because we're not a charity, that just makes it a little bit more difficult. So props to Josh for all the support he gets, and yeah, I don't know really what to do about that, but well done him.
It's grim. It's really grim. Yeah. Some of those robot sites are regarded as sort of attack sites. It was the little bit I've read about it, that people can actually use them to do attacks on sites.
Yeah. For a start, not following the 404, not following the robots of text is a red flag for me. The fact that you get a 404 and then, you know, 4 weeks later, you're still coming back to the same URL is a red flag for me. So ban their butts is what I say. And yeah, a big thank you to Josh for everything that he's done. He's like been on the ball this month helping us out. Basically, if you get a 500 error, I mean, we got this site for free from we're basically under attack all the time, and there's not really a lot we can do about it. Just know that in a half an hour, the moron that's been blocking you, their IP address will be banned, and it'll take a while for their open connections to phase off. Your RSS feed should be able to pick up missing shows again the next time it's run. So apologize for the little bit of turbulence, but hopefully we'll get you through.
Yep. There's not much else that we can do in the environment that we're in.
So new podcast coming up, website appears to be down, site unavailable again. And then Mike Ray had something about same columns in LibreOffice calc sheet. And Kevin O'Brien helped out, and Rob Hawkins and Rome Horningling. If I'm mispronouncing any of these people's names, feel free to record a show, tell us the correct pronunciation. Kevin had a title mishap, which I believe you fixed, is that correct?
I did indeed, yes. I meant to ask him what, because he'd put a title with a number and stuff in it, which didn't look right, but I forgot to ask him, so apologies, Kevin, for not coming back to you quicker. But I fixed it very quickly once he highlighted it.
And the Ohio Linux Fest is on the 15th in Ohio. We'll be on the September the 29th and 30th, so basically this weekend as well. Then we have news of the community news, and that's about it. Was there any other business, Dave?
We never. Clinton Roy presumably couldn't make it. He thought he was going to be able to join us tonight.
In the middle of the night.
Yeah, I know. But he did say he was going to try. But anyway, thank you for the thought. Anyway,
next time, if you want to organise one of these shows in your own time zone, absolutely no problem. We can send you the link to the webpage.
Yeah, I'll support you with notes and stuff. Yeah.
No problem.
I'll go to bed early.
Exactly.
So yes, on the any other business list, we've covered a few. We have podcast awards. The podcast awards ceremony is today, 5 p.m. PST. So
four more
not
hours.
Sure.
Yeah.
And
we're up against some stiff competition. But go on ahead, Jeff.
No, I was just reading out my notes, really. It's International Podcast Day, which is no coincidence. But we should all have been out there pushing the idea of podcasts getting people to record shows for HPR, really.
Yes. Which is what I'm looking for if we do get the table at FOSDEM. That's what I'm looking forward to doing, like getting more hosts.
Ooh, definitely. We need to be producing a sort of pack that we can give to people to say, you know, this is what we do, this is what we'd like from you, and blah, 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 and all that sort of stuff. Yeah. There's a lot of work to do if we get that. So FOSDEM we've covered, website issues we've covered, and we've really commented on Josh and anhonesthost.com. I put in an item there thanking him for this and reminding everybody that we're getting free facilities from Josh's company.
Yep.
So
cool.
That's pretty much it.
Cool. Dave, I have nothing else.
I have nothing else either. So we're good.
Tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of
Hacker
Public
Radio. Oh wow. It's almost as if we rehearsed that.
Yes. Okay. Join us now and share the software. You'll be free, hackers. You'll be free.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.